Hello and welcome to the next edition of the Well Spoken podcast. In this podcast, my colleague Stuart Beadnell and I will be discussing whether or not FPSOs are a distinct area of law which require their own subject matter. Just for your information, my name's John Simpson and I'm a partner in the Stevenson Harwood team in Singapore. I do a considerable amount of work involving FPSOs and construction and other contracts relating to FPSOs alongside the rest of the team. Stuart is probably the senior member of the FPSO team. He has many years of experience in relation to FPSOs, and I think he has some very useful insights to share on the subject. So I will just start off by asking Stuart, what do we mean by floating production?
Thank you, John. People tend to use the expression FPSO because it trips off the tongue and has been in use for many years now. But it does cover a wide range of methods of exploiting oil and gas reservoirs offshore using a floating facility, which may involve two vessels, one doing the production, one doing the storage. These days may involve gas processing, liquefaction. They call them FLNGs, floating LNGs. Some call them LNG FPSOs. But it's the whole range of using a vessel in some modified form to exploit the oil and gas reserves offshore. There we are. But we're going to call them FPSOs because that's easy.
Yes, it is. It makes life much easier for everybody using the acronym. The next question is really, does it have its own area of law?
Well, the answer to that's not really. But of course, when we say area of law, 90% of what you and I deal with, John, is just commercial law, isn't it, really? So when somebody talks about the law of shipbuilding contracts, there isn't really a law of shipbuilding contracts, it's just commercial law applying to shipbuilding. And you could say the same about even charter parties, time charters, voyage charters. It's just an expression of commercial law. That said, in the same way as shipbuilding or tanker charters or whatever, there are very distinct FPSO features which give rise to their own legal difficulties, things that lawyers have to look out for and we have to protect against the consequences. And those are specific to floating production. So in that sense, it is distinct.
Can you give some examples of some of the specific areas that need their own distinct consideration when it comes to FPSOs?
And how long have you got? I mean, obviously, I can talk on this for about, is it Chris, is it the production manager? Is it sort of 3 hours we've got, is it? No? Oh, sorry, 10 minutes. So I shall be brief. There are a large number, but the main point is that obviously we're producing. So the difficulties of producing offshore, getting the oil and gas reserves, and we don't quite know what's down there, that has its own difficulties, the consequences of failing to achieve the P in the FPSO. But really, it's about the F, because it's out there on its own. In 90% of these facilities, they have no export pipeline, so you have to offload to another vessel. So it's two vessels at sea. And it's operating as a ship. So if something goes wrong, there's no way out. You have to deal with it there and then. And crucially, whatever you're doing in terms of production, you have to do it on a limited area, limited amount of space, a limited amount of weight, because you can't have too heavy equipment, which makes the buoyancy of the vessel compromised. And of course, the stability of the vessel. As we all know, we're moving into familiar maritime territory here when you're looking at how these vessels operate. And crucially, relating to FPSOs, if it goes wrong, you cannot continue production. Not as though you can simply get an alternative. The oil field should be capable of continuous production. But if something goes wrong on the FPSO facility, you have to shut in the oil field. And that has obviously serious consequences. So the biggest factor, it may seem like the P, the production, but in reality, it's the F, because you're having to achieve all this with a floating facility. And finally, very briefly, it's about the S, actually, because you do all these things, you produce lots of oil, it's all fine, going really well, but you haven't got enough storage capacity, so you have to stop production. So the key feature really is the F, the P, the F, S, and the O, the offloading, because there's no point producing stuff if you don't offload it. All those things come together. And that's the key feature, I think, of an FPSO project.
So it's all of it, really. I remember there being quite a lot of debate about things like the application of the limitation convention in maritime law, which I believe may not apply to FPSOs. But that's just an example of something from maritime law which has a potential impact on FPSOs. Are there any other examples in maritime law that might be relevant?
Well, for maritime lawyers, it's fairly good news because, yes, a lot of the familiar maritime law concepts do apply. I wish I had, a bottle of beer for every time I'm asked the question, is it a ship? And the answer to that is, as always, well, it depends really, and it is sort of, but they are used as ships. They're built as ships, they're operated as ships, and they're registered as ships, and they have to comply with maritime conventions insofar as they're relevant. So in that sense, a typical maritime law does have its place. That said, of course, it isn't enough simply to apply maritime law because these are offshore installations. So they have to comply also with all the local oil state requirements. Can I just briefly say, of course, in terms of how FPSOs are designed, built and operated, then you'd be pleased to know, John, that the typical maritime contracts that we come across every day do have their place. FPSOs are built on contracts that are similar to shipbuilding. There are important differences and they mustn't be overlooked, but there's a lot of familiar legal structures there. And in the operation of these things, quite often they are operated under a form of charter party. And the key feature to that, of course, is the giving of orders as to employment. So one of the interesting features about the FPSO business is that much of the work is done by outsourced independent contractors who are specialists in procuring, modifying, delivering FPSOs and then operating them in accordance with instructions given by the oil company. So in that sense, they're fulfilling the role of a typical ship owner, particularly one providing a ship under a project like a LNG vessel or whatever. So you agree the specification, this is what you need. The owner has to go and find the vessel, either build it or convert one, and then deliver it and then operate it in accordance with the instructions of the oil company. So there are some very familiar shipping concepts in there.
So I suppose from that perspective, although most FPSO contracts are fairly bespoke because there's such a large amount of money involved usually in any individual FPSO project, that means that we can still rely on some of the shipbuilding cases and some of the charter party cases that shipping lawyers will be a bit more familiar with. Is that right?
Yes, you can. Although you've got to be a bit careful, of course, because you've got to be aware of the important differences. And frankly, some of the disputes that we've come across, because people are able to do that, simply apply what they know in shipbuilding or charter parties, but haven't really done enough to cater for the differences. One example I had was where it was an FLNG, the LNG FPSO, fairly large piece of kit, and the contract for that was drafted following familiar lines. But crucially, overlooking the fact that the FPSO has to be installed. It's not like a ship that can just buy, leaves the shipyard, off you go. You have to bring it to the FPSO site, the oil field site, and you can only test whether it's working or not, obviously, when you get there. And you can only test it when it's actually hooked up to the reservoir and is receiving hydrocarbons. So you're never going to know if it's going to work until then. And crucially, the one doing the testing is usually the what you might call the charterer, the oil company, or the one that's going to receive the services, which is odd because you have to hand over the vessel. They then do the work, but delivery doesn't occur until they're finished doing the acceptance tests. So you can see the scope for things going wrong if it isn't carefully managed in the drafting of the two contracts, because you've got one contract for the building and the construction, and so that has to reach a stage of delivery. And then also you might have a long-term operating agreement. It might not be called a charter party. It might be called an O&M agreement. I've seen them simply called agreements, because people don't want to use shipping expressions in case they think there's a whole load of shipping law that might take them by surprise. But whatever it's called, it has, as I've mentioned, the main themes of a charter party. And you have to make sure you're capable of being delivered into that charter party at the same time. So you can see how your traditional shipbuilding and charter concepts are in there, but they need a bit of turbocharging.
Well, probably everybody in the department has come across these interface management sort of issues, and particularly issues involving commissioning, especially when that commissioning is not actually done by the people who originally built the FPSO. Why has nobody written a book on the subject?
Well, they probably haven't found the time. It's quite a large venture to pull all of these different areas of law together and bring them into one book. But fortunately, during lockdown, we normally spend a lot of time coming to see you in Singapore and meeting people in China, Korea, whatever. Lovely places. We haven't had time to do that. So what we have done is sit down and produce an FPSO book. And the intention is to focus very much on the familiar chartering aspects. So it's essentially a book on FPSO charters. So, John, I'm very happy for your contributions to that, but we're hoping to publish that towards the end of this year. And if anybody listening has a particular question that they would love to have covered in the FPSO book, we'd be very grateful for that.
Absolutely. And I will be looking forward to an opportunity to contribute and possibly a signed copy from you, Stuart.
Long as I can come to you in person. And in fact, we might have a book launch party in Singapore. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be lovely. And you'll be very welcome. I think that brings our podcast to a conclusion. And thank you very much indeed for listening. This is only one in a series of the Well Spoken podcasts, and I'm sure you will be hearing from us again in the near future. Thank you very much for your time.